Knowledge.
Knowledge.
Yet.
Yet.
That which.
That which.
Up to the limit of.
Up to the limit of.
Pratinivritta.
Pratinivritta.
Completely withdrawn.
Completely withdrawn.
Guna urmi.
Guna urmi.
The waves of the material modes.
The waves of the material modes.
Chakram.
Chakram.
Whirlpool.
Whirlpool.
Atma prasada.
Atma prasada.
Self-satisfaction.
Self-satisfaction.
Uta, moreover.
Moreover.
Yatra, where there is.
Where there is.
Guneshu, in the modes of nature.
In the modes of nature.
Asangaha, no attachment.
No attachment.
Kaivalya,
Kaivalya,
transcendental.
Transcendental.
Samatha,
approved.
Approved. Pataha, path.
Path.
To,
but.
But Atta,
therefore,
Bhakti Yoga,
devotional service,
Kaha,
who,
Nirvitta,
absorbed in,
Harikatasu, in the transcendental topics of the Lord,
in the transcendental topics of the Lord,
Ratim,
attraction.
Na
shall not.
Kuryat do. Translation: transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment, and being transcendental, it is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Purport. According to the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, text 9, the characteristics of pure devotees are wonderful. The complete functional activities of a pure devotee are always engaged in the service of the Lord, and thus the pure devotees exchange feelings of ecstasy between themselves and relish transcendental bliss. Machita madgata prana bodhiyantascha padasparam kathiyantascha mamnicham tushamticha ramanticha. That's the verse Prabhupada is referring to. This transcendental bliss is experienced even in the stage of devotional practice, sadhana avastha, if properly undertaken under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. And in the mature stage, the developed transcendental feeling culminates in realization of a particular relationship with the Lord by which a living entity is originally constituted. There's that word, originally constituted, again. You understand? That sort of like defeats all the people who say that we came from the Brahma Jyoti, or we came from the Tatashta Shakti, originally constituted, up to the relationship of conjugal love with the Lord, which is estimated to be the highest transcendental bliss. Thus, Bhakti Yoga, being the only means of God realization, is called Kaivalya. Srila Jiva Goswami quotes the Vedic version, Eko Narayano Deva, Paravaranam Parama Aste Kaivalya Sangitaha. In this connection, it establishes that Narayan, the personality of God, is known as Kaivalya. And the means which enables one to approach the Lord is called the Kaivalya Panta, or the only means of attainment of Godhead. This Kaivalya Panta begins from Shravanam, or the hearing those topics that relate to the personality of Godhead, and the natural consequence of hearing such Harikatha is attainment of transcendental knowledge, which causes detachment from all mundane topics, for which a devotee has no taste at all. For a devotee, all mundane activities, social and political, become unattractive, even the news. And in the mature state, such a devotee becomes uninterested even in his own body, and what to speak of bodily relatives. In such a state of affairs, one is not agitated by the waves of the material modes. There are different modes of material nature in all mundane functions in which a common man is very much interested or in which he takes part become unattractive for the devotee. This state of affairs is described here in as pratinivritta-gur-normi. And it is possible by atma-prasada or complete self-satisfaction without any material connection. The first-class devotee of the Lord attains this stage by devotional service, but despite his loftiness, for the Lord's satisfaction he may play the voluntary part of a preacher of the Lord's glory and dovetail all into devotional service, even mundane interest, just to give the neophytes a chance to transform mundane interest into transcendental bliss. Srila Rupa Goswami has described this action of a pure devotee as nirvanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchate. Even mundane activities dovetailed with service to the Lord are also calculated to be transcendental or approved kaivalya affairs. So again, the Sanskrit. Jnanam yada pratinivritta gunarmi chakram atma prasada utajatra guneshva sangha kaivalya sammatapatastvata bhakti yugaha ko nirvito harikatasu ritimna kuryat. So, omagana timidandasha gananjana shalakaya chakshurun meditam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So, start the discussion. Transcendental knowledge. Okay, so transcendental knowledge, generally we consider transcendental knowledge to be of three types. Sambandhagyan, Abhidhagyan, Prayojanagyan. Everybody understands those three? Sambandha basically means the relationships of the different energies and the Lord and his expansions and all that other stuff. For example, we have the material energy, we have the spiritual energy, we have us, the jiva soul, marginal potency of the Lord. We have, time, we have karma, and all these different factors, actually the five things that are described in the Bhagavad Gita. And there's more to Sambandhagyan than that. I was just listening to a class of Srila Prabhupada this morning. He was describing the different vigrahas, the vilas vigraha, expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, aveshas, portions of plenary portions. I mean, it was quite a complicated discussion Srila Prabhupada was making, in that Krishna has certain types of expansions, such as in the rasa dance, and other types of expansions, such as his Chaturvyuha expansions, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Prajuna, and Adigruda. And it was interesting, Prabhupada was talking about how all these different expansions, they're not like a yogi's expansions. Like the yogi's expansions, Prabhupada said, are like TV expansions. And Prabhupada gave the example of Shobari Muni, who basically got a little lusty because he had committed an offense to Garuda. I think you all know that story, right? Shobari Muni? No. Shobari Muni was meditating in the Yamuna River, and he wanted to protect the fish from being eaten by Garuda. And so he cursed Garuda. And as a result, in spite of being a great yogi, meditating, etc., like that, he became lusty by seeing two fish engage in romantic affairs. I don't even know what that means. But Prabhupada described it. You ever seen fish engage in romantic affairs? I haven't. Anyway, so he jumped out of the water, and to make a long story short, I won't make it that short. He went to the king and asked for the king's daughter in marriage. The king had 50 daughters. And the king said, you know, anybody who wants to marry you can marry you. And because he was so ugly at that point, having meditated in the water for so many years, The king thought that this was a trick. Nobody's going to want to marry him. He was completely waterlogged. Then he transformed himself into a young man, and then he married all 50 girls. Anyway, and it's described that he had all these different expansions there. And his expansions were like television expansions. In other words, it wasn't like Krishna and Dwarka, where Krishna was doing something different with each and every wife. You know, with one wife, one family, he was playing with the kids, another one, he was eating dinner, etc., when Narada Muni went to visit Krishna and Dwarka. So that's a little bit different. So anyway, so this is all part of Sambandha Jnana. In other words, understanding the Lord, understanding the Lord's energies, basically. That's it. The Lord and the Lord's energies. And time is one of the Lord's energies. Material world is one of the Lord's energies. We're one of the Lord's energies. The internal potency is one of the Lord's energies. Whew. So many. Parashu Shakti, Vividaiva Shuyutes, Vabhavaki Jnana, Balak, Vyatcha. Oh, incidentally, there's a very interesting thing about the Lord's energies. That in the Brahma Samhita, it describes that at the time of creation, when there was only the Pradhan, the Lord glanced at the Pradhan, which is the unmanifest stage of the three modes of material nature, and he implanted within the Pradhan the time factor as well as the living entities. Now, the reason I'm mentioning that is this is very much in tune with what the scientists believe as far as the Big Bang. Big Bang? The scientists say that before the Big Bang, there was no time. And we say the same thing. Because Krishna implanted the time factor. Anyway, so that's Sambandha Jnana. And then apart from Sambandha Jnana, there's Abhideya Jnana. Abhideya means, what do you do about the knowledge that you got with Sambandha Jnana? You know, now that you know about the Lord, his energies, reincarnation, karma, time, the material world, spiritual world, what do you do about it? Well, basically, you should want to get the hell out of it, out of the material world. And Abhideya means how the process of getting out of the material world, such as sadhana bhakti, which means basically chanting, for us, it means chanting our rounds, rising early, worshipping Tulsi Devi, worshipping the deities, chanting the holy names, living in a holy place, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, the five different important factors mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. And that's Abhideya, the process of Abhideya. And of course, it entails Vaidhi, it gets more complicated, the Vaidhi Bhakti, Raghunuga Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and Prema Bhakti. And right now, most of us are doing Vaidhi Bhakti, right? Any Prema Bhaktis here, Raghunuga Bhaktis? Any? No. Anyway, even if you were, you wouldn't say. So if you do say, that means you're probably not very advanced. You say, I'm a Raghunuga Bhakta. I was talking to one devotee once who wasn't so strict in his sadhana. And I said, it'd be a good idea if you got some strictness in your sadhana. And he said, isn't there any place in the Hare Krishna movement for spontaneous devotional service? And I said, yes, there's a place, but according to Srila Rupa Goswami, if someone is on the platform of Raghunuga Bhakti, he will act externally as a Vaidhi Bhakta. Why? Yadyana Charity Shresh Das, to set a good example, and also, guess what? He's humble. Someone is not going to say, I'm a spontaneous devotee. So that's Abhideya, and then Prayojana. Prayojana means, like, what happens in the spiritual world? 10th canto, a lot of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is this Prayojana Jnana. So, these three types of knowledge. In addition, Prabhupada says at the end of purport that even mundane activities dovetailed with the service of the Lord are calculated to be transcendental or approved Kaivalya affairs, which is actually a very interesting statement. And Prabhupada previously makes reference to this verse about yukta vairagya, nirbandha krishna sambandha yukta vairagya mujjate, that one should understand how to utilize the material energy in Krishna's service, and by utilizing the material energy in Krishna's service under the direction of a pure devotee, that's spiritual. Glorious Prabhupada said, using the example of an electrician who can transform electricity into either heating or cooling, that the Lord transforms the material energy. So, you know, what is apparently mundane becomes transformed by engagement in devotional service. Another example Prabhupada gave was an iron rod being put into a fire becomes hot, and eventually it becomes, or acts as fire. So, therefore, activities in Krishna's service, let's say if we're talking about someone doing construction and talking about how to construct a temple, or like you're trying to construct this part of the pavilion here, that's transcendental. It's not mundane. Or, as Prabhupada instructed many of these scientifically inclined devotees to look into this whole, subject matter of life comes from life, and then they have to study mathematics, microbiology, and all those other things, which appears to be very mundane, then it becomes spiritualized or spiritual by being engaged in Krishna's service. So that's also transcendental topics. So that's transcendental knowledge. In other words, topics about Krishna, topics about how to get out of the material world, you know, Abhideya, topics about the spiritual world, topics about how to serve Krishna, another topic is Krishna's pure devotees' pastimes. Like, we have so many books about Srila Prabhupada's activities while he was here with us. Unfortunately, nowadays, as I go around the world, I find that most of the devotees haven't even read the Prabhupada Lilamrita. It's very unfortunate. And so, you know, we're talking about keeping Prabhupada in the center. But in order to keep Prabhupada in the center, one has to understand Prabhupada. Just like Prabhupada said, in order to love God, you have to know God. In order to love Prabhupada and focus your mind on Prabhupada's mission, you have to know Prabhupada. So there should be a system everywhere for devotees to read. Of course, whenever a new biography comes out, I just devour it. That's an interesting word, devour. You know, I jump on it or whatever, and I read it. So devotees should be very enthusiastic. So that's another type of Krishna Katha. All these are different types of Krishna Katha by which one becomes, let's say, as described here, in the situation of complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Another interesting verse in the Gita in this regard, insofar as Yukta Vairagya is, the English is, by making a full contribution to Brahman, the person making the offering itself, the result of the offering, become transformed into Brahman. Here it is, Brahma Pranam, Brahma Havya, Brahmagno, Brahmano, Utam. Brahma tena gantavyam, Brahma karma samadhinam. So if one is absorbed even in serving Krishna, that's absorption in Krishna. And the symptom of that, the result of that, is that one becomes detached. Vasudeva bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita. Janayati asu vairagyam gyanam cha yad ahaitakam. One becomes detached from this material world. So if one is not becoming, and also not becoming attached from the material world, and not developing a taste for Vasudeva Katha Ruchi, for Krishna consciousness, then the Bhagavatam says that one is simply doing something wrong, in other words, wasting one's time. Vasudeva Katha Ruchi, Shan Mahat Seveya Vibra, Hunya Tirtha Nishevada. So, so anyway, so this is actually the test of whether we're actually engaged and cultivating transcendental knowledge of the various types, that we become detached from this material world. Detached means detached from the anarthas, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, attachment, and also get a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. So, anyway, is there anything else I want to say about this? I said, such knowledge is self-satisfying due to being freed from material attachment and being transcendental as approved by authorities. So this is the method of becoming detached from this world. Rather than being negative about this world, in other words, that's the that would be like Sankhya Yoga or the impersonalists, who have some negative attitude towards this world, or even immature devotees who simply consider everything to be Maya or illusion. I remember the early days of the movement, the brahmacharis would consider all the ladies to be Maya devis, and they would blame the ladies for their attachment to them. Yeah. And they said, oh, I got victimized. But actually, it's not the lady's fault, it's not the sense object's fault that you're attached to the sense object. It's your fault that you're not enough attached to Krishna. So, any questions or comments about any of these points? Questions, comments, arguments? Yes.
Is Karma Yoga synonymous with Yukta Vaigragya?
Is what yoga?
Karma Yoga.
Karma Yoga is interesting. Karma Yoga basically, technically, means to work for Krishna, connect yourself with Krishna by working for him. Karma Yoga is contained within Bhakti Yoga. However, if you're a Karma Yogi, you can be a Karma Yogi without a Bhakti Yoga, without being a Bhakti Yogi. You understand? But if you're a Bhakti Yoga Yogi, sorry, you're automatically a Karma Yogi at the same time. You're doing Karma Yoga. Now, you're not a Karma Yogi, you're doing Karma Yoga. So, and actually, Krishna, in the 12th chapter of the Gita, he talks about this. Let me read this. 12th chapter of the Gita, he talks about the difference. The beginning of the 12th chapter of the Gita. After he blasts the impersonalists. First of all, he says, be a bhakti yogi. In the 8th text, he says, fix your mind upon me, thus you will live in me always. And then, that's for pure devotees, and if you can't do that, next verse, text 9, if you can't do that, follow bhakti yoga. Next verse, text 10, is if you can't practice bhakti yoga, then just try to work for me. Because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. So that's Karma Yoga without Bhakti Yoga in text 10. Text 9, the previous text, which says, follow the regulating principles of Bhakti Yoga, that's Bhakti Yoga, which automatically includes Karma Yoga. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
So if you're dealing with sets and subsets, then if you have this big Venn diagram, if you have Bhakti Yoga, automatically you have Karma Yoga inside it. But if you have Karma Yoga, you may or may not have Bhakti Yoga. Does that make sense? Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Can you repeat that sentence, the purport where Prabhupada used the word constituted or constitutional?
Alrighty.
And explain the emphasis on that, please.
Trying to find that. Wait. Where's that in the purport?
Originally constituted.
It's in the first paragraph.
First paragraph, all right. Yes. Wait a minute. The complete functional entity is
growing. In the mature stage, the developed transcendental
feeling. Oh, and in the mature stage, the developed transcendental feeling culminates in realization of the particular relationship with the Lord by which a living entity is originally constituted. That means that's his original constitution. Constitution means nature.
Okay, does that mean the original rasa or sarup, the eternal relationship we have with Krishna and the five different rasas, is already their constitution?
Yes, it's their constitution.
Do we have to develop that?
No, it's there constitutionally. We have to realize it. Prabhupada said, gave the example that when one performs devotional service, it's like waking up in the morning. In other words, by the sound vibration, if you have an alarm clock, or nowadays, alarm mobile phone, by the sound vibration, you're woken up. And you, some of us, not me, but some of us take a while to remember who we are when we get up in the morning. Anyone's had that experience? Then you get up in the morning. Well, at least remember where you are. Okay, forget about who you are. Let's talk about where you are. And especially, for me, the where you are is a big thing. Because I have to be careful of getting off the wrong side of the bed in the morning. Because sometimes, when I wake up in the morning, I hit the wall because the last bed I was in, the wall wasn't there. And so, it takes a while to realize, especially here it can be dangerous because the bed they give me is quite high. And I'm not used to a bed that high. So I have to remember, as soon as the alarm rings, don't jump off the bed. Because where I stay in North Carolina, we have the bed basically on the floor. It's almost like a futon, but with mattress, you know, but real close to the floor. So therefore, it takes some time to remember in the morning. And the transcendental sound wakes one up so that they remember gradually who they are. And Krishna in the Gita gives the examples like when the sun comes up in the morning, then everything becomes revealed.
So that constitution cannot be changed.
I don't want to say cannot be changed. Like technically, Prabhupada did say one time that if one wants to change their rust, they can do it. But that's generally not done. But we have this constitutional nature. In other words, you, Vrishaya, are either a gopi, it's hard to understand, or a coward boy, or you know, one of the mothers of Krishna, or let's say a servant of Krishna, or just a passive worshiper of Krishna. And it's there. It's a question of realizing it. Now, we do not ascribe to the process of Siddha Pranali in our Krishna consciousness movement. Siddha Pranali would mean that I would come to you, let's say if I was your rasa guru, you know, I would say, someone would say to you, Bhushaya, that the reason you haven't realized your rasa is you haven't accepted a rasa guru yet. Actually, the people do propaganda like that to try to convince people to leave ISKCON. I was reading one book where they were talking about Prabhupada's rasa, and they said that Prabhupada was, anyway, I'm not going to get into this, was of a particular rasa, and if you want to have a different rasa, you really need to approach someone different. It was written by an ex-ISKCON devotee. I mean, that was the import of the whole thing. That, you know, I don't want to get into the details because I was so upset by reading this book. I read it because I have to be aware of these things, to counter these things. I'm not suggesting that everyone should read them, but that's my service. I have to be aware. First of all, one shouldn't even speculate about the rust of the spiritual master. Prabhupada would often say if someone asked him a question like that, that question you do not need to ask. That's a polite way of saying, it's none of your business, buddy. Prabhupada was more polite. So, Anyway, there's this process of siddha pranali, which was done in the past by pure devotees, and it's mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in some of his works, like the Jiva Dharma, where the spiritual master, the Rasa Guru, let's say if I was your Rasa, let's go back to that example, hypothetical. Let's say if I was Bhushaya's Rasa Guru, and I would say, Bhushaya, looking at you, at your soul, I can see that you're a gopi. And I would give you something called a Kadasa Bhava. That means Bhava, it means the 11 aspects of your personality. I would say, you dress in a yellow sari, you're a follower of Sudevi, one of the Astasakis. I'm not saying, don't take this literally, Bhushaya. It's just, you know, I don't want to see you tomorrow in a yellow sari, you know. I mean, you'll be a little controversial. Just a little controversial, not much. So, and then I give you all these 11 aspects of your personality, what you do. You cook sweet rice for the divine couple, and you wake them up in the morning, and your parents' name is such and such, and Goluk Vrindavan. All right, so what would you do with that information if I told you?
It wouldn't be relevant right now.
No, it wouldn't be relevant. And it's not our process, this process. It's called siddha pranali. And particularly the Babaji's in Radhakund and Vrindavan, not all of them, they do this process and they attract people. Because obviously, you know, it's a lot easier than getting up every morning going to Mangal Arati and just struggling with the six senses, you know. Just to think, well, I'm a gopi. And then, of course, when you start to think like that, not you, but when someone starts to think about like that and they're not qualified, then they just project their own mundane inebrities or desires upon the transcendental realm, and it just spoils everything. Of course, that's called sahaja. So our process, according to His Divine Grace Śrīla Prabhupāda and Bhakti Siddhānta Saraswati Thakura, is deserve, then desire. That's our process. And we have faith, I mean, I have faith, that when Śrīla Prabhupāda wants, Śrīla Prabhupāda will reveal whatever our constitutional nature is, and Krishna will reveal in the heart, you know, somehow or other. It'll be figured out. And also, our process for becoming Krishna conscious is to please Śrīla Prabhupāda. I mean, it's a very easy process. We don't have to get into all these complicated things. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada, yasya prasada na kati katopi. If we please Prabhupada, then we'll get all perfection, isn't it? It's very easy. I don't have to worry. I don't, at this point in my devotional service, I don't worry whether I'm a gopi or coward boy or rock or a monkey. Lord Ram's pastime, that's kind of interesting. Sistine Hanuman, I'd like to do that. So I don't worry about those things. I just think I would like to please Prabhupada. I mean, that's my focus in my life, to please Prabhupada. As far as going back to Godhead, whatever, you know, if we please Prabhupada, that is already back to Godhead. Isn't it? And it's already back to Godhead. If you're just concentrating on pleasing Prabhupada and carrying out his mission and tolerating all the things that occur in the process of your working in his mission, that's a big thing. I mean, I can't tell you how many things you have to tolerate. Then if you do that, then Prabhupada would be pleased. I mean, Prabhupada, you know, one time said to, I think it was to Ambarish or some, or to Jatavataka Maharaj, that if you build this temple in Mayapur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will personally come and take you by hand back to Godhead. That's our method. Actually, in the previous verse, in the Bhagavatam, text 11, no, that's about the demigods. Anyway, there's a verse here. That, yeah, that is a previous verse. All the different kinds of worshippers, multi-demigods, can attain the highest perfectional benediction, which is spontaneous attraction, unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead only by the association of the pure devotee of the Lord. That's a previous verse. Now, what does it mean, the association? Does it mean, like, physically being present and just grabbing the dust from his feet? Of course, that's nice, too. These are powerful substances. The dust of the feet of the pure devotee, the foot bathing water, the prasadam remnants of the pure devotee. Yes, that's true, too. But by pleasing the pure devotee, understanding what the pure devotee wants, and pleasing him or her, their pure devotee ladies, too, then all perfection is there. Right? I mean, to me, that's how... I, to be honest, I'm not that much interested in realizing my spiritual identity. I guess I should reveal my mind. I'm just interested in pleasing Prabhupada. To me, I would just like to be able to serve Prabhupada life after life. I mean, if Krishna could give me that blessing, that's all I really, right now at least, aspire for. And then when Krishna wants to reveal things, that's up to him. Isn't it? The Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Yenamam Upiyantite, Tesham Satadi Yuktanam, Vajatam Priti Purvakam, the Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Yenamam Upiyantite. You know, I will give, Krishna says, I'll give the intelligence to those who worship me with devotion. Personally, I can't say that I had any devotion. But at least I can say that I have devotion for Prabhupada. And so, and then Prabhupada is accepting, just like when we do arti, we approach the deities through the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's not that I go directly to Krishna. Hey, Krishna, here I am. Aren't you fortunate to see me here, Krishna? No, it's Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada does the offering, and that's my realization. Yes?
Yeah, along those lines there was, to support what you were saying, that there was a letter Srila Prabhupada wrote, it was probably around 1972, and he was referring to, he said, we will have our ISKCON in the spiritual sky.
Yeah.
I will be there, Shamsundar will be there, this one will be there, everyone will be there except for Mr. Nair.
Bombay.
So, you know, and I often meditated on this point that there's an, and he also says that there's an ISKCON, there'll be an ISKCON in the spiritual sky, he said.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that we have an eternal relationship. Now, that could mean also, though, that we're being sent out helping Prabhupada.
Yeah.
Like that. And again, in terms of this idea of spontaneous service, I've been meditating on this a lot, is that, you know, generally when people say that, it's like you said, that I've reached the level where I can chant or not chant, I do it when, because I'm now spontaneous.
Yeah.
But in a more practical way, I've realized, in a sense, it's kind of just recently the penny dropped of whatever that means, but you know, say you have a service that requires you to set up the bathing trays,
mm-hmm.
and then you notice that something else that's not your service hasn't been done,
mm-hmm.
and then you just do it without being told to do it,
mm-hmm.
just do it,
mm-hmm.
without complaining that someone else didn't do it, you do it. And so to me, that means, not that you're like you're more advanced or something, but that is a spontaneous form of service.
Right.
So it's not a very complicated thing. It's not meaning that you have to all of a sudden achieve some level where you've graduated from the day-to-day routine.
Mm.
But you're in the day-to-day routine, and you're increasing your service, even if you're unasked.
That's nice. Prabhupada also said that if we see something that's wrong and we don't act on it, and we have the capacity to act on it, we're actually in ignorance. Mm-hmm. Like if you see something in the, let's say you're doing the something in the pujari room and you see something on the floor that's not your service and you just say, well, it's not my service. Or you're walking around the Dom here and you see garbage on the floor and you say, well, I'm not supposed to be the garbage man picking it up. Mm-hmm. Then you're actually in ignorance.
Right.
Or just as responsible. There's actually a technical definition for spontaneous devotional service. What you're saying is actually true, that you know, you see something and you do it, that spontaneous and spontaneous devotional service. But there's also a technical definition for Raganuga Bhakti, which is the second stage of Sadhana Bhakti. And in that particular stage of Raganuga Bhakti, you actually have some realization about your spiritual identity and you follow in the footsteps of some particular eternal resident of Vrindavan. This is a nectar of devotion.
Yeah.
And my point was that even if one is on that particular level, let's say I was following in the footsteps of Kamsa, sorry. Probably I'm doing that. Or, you know, following in the footsteps of, let's say, Subal, one of the cowherd boys. Then, basically, you know, I would take on that mood and serve in that mood, but that would always be internal. It wouldn't be something that I would let anyone know. And at the same time, I would act as a sadhaka, I mean, a Vaidhi Bhakti, following the principles of Vaidhi Bhakti, because I would be humble. I'm just being hypothetical here. Because I would be humble thinking that, like Prabhupada said, you know, that you Western boys and girls are not enough afraid of Maya. I'd be humble because you can fall down up to the stage of bhava. You can fall down. I mean, look at Bharat Maharaj. He was on the platform of bhava and he fell down in devotional service. At least he didn't lose his devotional service, but he actually did fall down because he wasn't attentive. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, up to the stage of bhava, even though you have no more anarthas, you're not absolutely freed from anarthas. They can come back if you're inattentive. Even though there's none there, they may come back.
Who's the one of Prabhupada's
thoughts? What's that? Abhimangal Thakur.
Now, he was experiencing...
He was on bhava, too. He was on bhava, too, and that was a heavy story. I heard Prabhupada tell that the day before yesterday, because I listen to Prabhupada's classes every morning. And Prabhupada told the story in such a heavy way that, you know, he asked for the hairpins of this lady and then he poked his eyes out.
Mm-hmm. He asked her to go in the back room.
Yeah. Well, he said to the man, he said, you know, I'd like to be alone with your wife.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada actually said, I want to enjoy your wife in this particular...
Wow.
In this particular narration. I was thinking, oh my God, what's the guy thinking when some man comes, doesn't want to enjoy... But Prabhupada said, because Bilba Mangal was a Brahmin, and there was the culture of respecting the request of a Brahmin. And then he said... Then it's interesting, Prabhupada said, then he said, Mataji, please give me your hairpins, and put out his eyes.
Is he the same one that climbs the wall and you realize...
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a story. That's a wonderful story. And devotees used to put that play on.
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to put the play on. It just, he climbed the wall, and there was a snake on the wall. He grabbed hold of a dead body or a crocodile while crossing the river. And Chintamani, that is, his guru spoke through the lips of Chintamani, who was a prostitute, his girlfriend, basically. And she said, if you were as much attached to Krishna as you are to me, this dead body, Prabhupada said, then you know, would be pure devotee. And he left. What?
And always remembered her as his first guru.
Yeah. Yeah, he paid respects to her. His actual guru, I think, was called Somagiri, if I remember correctly. And she was Chintamani. And he wrote the most elevated books, such as the Krishna Karnamrita, which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much appreciated.
But
How can he write when you're blind?
Usually they would dictate.
Krishnadas Kaviraj.
Well, Krishnadas Kaviraj, he was not completely blind. His hand was shaking. He describes his hand was shaking. He was almost blind. But obviously he had someone. He didn't use a mobile phone to record. You know, obviously he had someone do it. I mean, he couldn't have written being completely blind. Anyway, that's my speculation, but it's, you know, it's an obvious point. Someone else must have written. So, any other questions or comments? Anyone want to find out their spiritual identity here? Anyway, it's an allurement that many people succumb to. That, you know, when they go to Vrindavan. Or that's why Prabhupada said that people, at least newer devotees, when they go to the holy dham, should be accompanied by older devotees who can protect them. Yes?
Maharaj, you were saying just a little while ago about tolerating, like, oh, the devotees should all tolerate these things. At what point do you draw the line and not tolerate things?
That's a good question. I mean, obviously, we don't want to be subjected to abuse, either physical, mental, psychological abuse. We should make some adjustment to protect ourselves from these things. But at the same time, when one takes up a service for Krishna, what we've seen because of the nectarian aspects of the internet, then one will be subjected to quite a bit of criticism. And as we used to chant when I was a demon, sticks and stones will break my bones. What's the rest of it? Names will never hurt me. Because we have it, we can always just take shelter of Krishna's names. I mean, ultimately, when things go wrong, we can think like Dharma the Bull did in relationship to the personality of Kali. He didn't blame Kali for what was happening to him. Remember the story?
Yeah.
He actually understood it was the Lord's plan. And Krishna in the sixth chapter of the Gita says, Yomam Pashati Sarvatra, Sarvam Chamayi Pashati, Tashaham Navranashami, Sachame Pranashati. Anyone know that verse? I'll give you the translation. It's a very important verse, one of the really important verses of the Gita, 630.
Is it about identifying the perpetrator?
No, he says, one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. It's really one of the nutshell, I know it's not the nutshell verse of the Gita, but to me it's one of the nutshell verses of the Gita. To always see Krishna in everything, and everywhere. So if someone, let's say, does something or says something that may be painful to me, I have to see Krishna's done it. I didn't do it. You know, I had no control over these things. And why did Krishna do it? Number two. Number three, what am I supposed to do about it? And so it doesn't mean I stand around and just get attacked. You know, sometimes you got to defend yourself. Obviously, you know, we're not advocates of absolute nonviolence. Like Prabhupada commented when Mahatma Gandhi said that even if his own daughter was attacked, he would just stand there. Prabhupada said, that's nonsense. You know, so obviously we can defend ourselves, but we have to not blame the perpetrator. And that's a hard thing. That's really hard. If someone does something to us, understand that ultimately Krishna's not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What's the reason it happened? That's a hard one. And that's what Dharma the Bull pointed out when he was asked by Parikshit Maharaj, who has done this to you? And Dharma the Bull basically indicated that it was Krishna's plan. He didn't say, that's Kali there. Kill that creep. Wipe him out. And it's a heavy story. So any other questions or comments? Or problems or issues? Or anyone want to know their spiritual identity? It's free today. No charge.
That's called the Siddha Deha.
The Siddha Deha means your spiritual identity. Siddha Pranali means given the Rasa Guru will tell you who you are and what you do in the spiritual world and what you look like. That's called Siddha Pranali. That was a bona fide process for pure devotees. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about that in the Jiva Dharma. That is not a process given to us by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, nor by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada's process, just to reiterate, is to deserve then desire. I mean, at the same time, we're reading the Vaishnava literature, we're cultivating, you know, doing sadhana and everything like that. But when it's time, we'll understand what our spiritual identity is. I mean, we have groups of devotees nowadays who go on the internet and just talk about their rasas with Krishna. It's just not something that Prabhupada really wanted, something internal. I mean, sure, if you've realized and you have some friend there, you can discuss it back and forth, didati prajagranati, guyam akyati prichati, that's fine. But to go on the internet...
My memory is in the Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada said that at some point, there may be, while still in this body, someone from Gokula will approach you. And begin to train
someone. Yeah, well, one gets trained. This is an internal thing.
Yeah.
One gets trained. It's not that I will make followers by going to you
right.
and saying, I've been sent by Prabhupada.
Right.
You know, or I can tell you everything that you want to know, but you're afraid to ask, and Prabhupada never told you. That's basically one of the strategies of some groups outside ISKCON. You know, Prabhupada, like I was hinting at before, Prabhupada was a particular ras. If you want to be on a higher ras, then you really need to approach a different siksha group. And guess what? That's me. And so there's a lot of political machinations behind...
Machinations.
Look that word up later, you'll understand what I mean.
Sure. No. Yeah. Actually, if you read the story of Duma Krishna and that the way that all transpired with his Diksha Guru and Jiva Goswami and how it's handled, it's much more polite and philosophical, and there's no like attempt by the Diksha Guru to. And actually, Jiva Goswami was actually involved. It was the Lalita who was involved.
And his Diksha Guru beat him up. You know that story?
I didn't know that part.
No. Yeah. Hriday Chaitanya, his Diksha Guru, actually beat him up. Because he had a different ras than the Diksha Guru. And then Hriday Chaitanya had a dream that night. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know that story? Lord Chaitanya was bloody. And he said, why have you beaten up? You know, I took, you know. What?
Wasn't it because at first he just thought Shyamananda had rebelled and gone to a different material group?
Yeah.
And so he started beating him, but then he understood that it was from
what well, basically he said Shyamananda is unchaste.
Yeah.
Because he is in a different bhav than his guru.
So I don't know that.
Yeah, that's part of the story.
Oh, I'm just talking about the initial reaction. But later on, it's even deeper than that.
Yeah, you get deeper. The initial reaction is he thought he got reinitiated by someone else. Then Shyamananda explained that actually I had a dream, Guru Maharaj, and you gave me this name. And then Guru Maharaj, that's Hriday Chaitanya, said, those dreams are nonsense. I was not in that dream. You know, sometimes you find disciples who say they have a dream, Guru Maharaj, you told me to do this, and they said, that wasn't me. That was Maya Guru. So then And then Guru Maharaj, that is Hriday Chaitanya, went, it's a complicated story, he went to Vrindavan to confront Shyamananda. And he said, if you're actually Shyamananda, then we're going to do a test. And that test will be that you have the name Shyamananda written on you. I'm going to wipe it off. And if it reappears, anyone remember that story now? Yeah. If it reappears, then we know it's your bona fide name and you actually got it from Lalita. And so at that point, Shyamananda went into meditation. He chanted a mantra that Lalita gave him that he could enter into Radhakrishna's pastimes at any point. So he chanted that and he went to see Radharani. He was crying. He said, my husband, Swami, because Swami means husband and also means master and also means guru, has actually beaten me. What should I do? And then Subal, this is such an interesting story, who was Hriday Chaitanya's spiritual master as Gauridas Pandit. Everyone following what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Who was actually the spiritual master of Shyamananda's spiritual master. Or Hriday Chaitanya's spiritual master, same thing. He wrote the name of Shyamananda on the chest. And so she, because she's in a female form now, goes back to external consciousness, or let's say material world stuff, and the guru wipes off the name and the name reappears. A few days later, he gets angry and beats his disciple up. Does anyone remember that part of the story? Yeah, that's the full story. You could look it up. He actually hits Shyamananda. Then he has a dream, and Lord Chaitanya chastises him in that dream for beating his disciple up. And then Lord Chaitanya gives him a punishment of having something like 12 festivals. He has to sponsor 12 festivals. And then they live happily ever after. Look up the story. That's the whole story.
Which book is it in?
It's in several different books. The Narottama Vilas. It's in the Bhakti Ratnakara. It's in the standard biographies of Shyamananda. And also, one of my godbrothers wrote that in his biography of Shyamananda.
Satyaraj.
Yeah, Satyaraj.
He wrote about each of the Goswamis and...
And also Narottam Shyamananda Srinivas Thakur.
But he doesn't mention that part in his telling. At least one I saw didn't say that last part.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember.
I think that was in his book too. That's
it. Do you remember him feeding Shyamananda and then having the dream?
Yeah. Huh. So that's it. That's in the book, yeah. It's a complicated story. I mean, somehow or other, I remember all this stuff. Yes?
Lakaraj, I think, I may be confused, but I believe I read somewhere that maybe last year you participated in a, probably was a seminar, a conference about the succession in ISKCON, something involved the second generation. Maybe
yeah.
There was a conference in Europe or somewhere. Can you share
some? I didn't participate in that, no. I didn't participate in any conference in Europe last year. But in the GBC, we were talking about succession. But I wasn't at that conference. Yes, we have to have succession. Actually, we're hoping to have some next generation, maybe third generation, devotees on the management team here. We're going to be talking about that today. It's not second generation anymore, it's third generation. You may even have some fourth generation people. Yeah?
After our succession festival, last Thanksgiving weekend, I just heard some of those younger devotees expressing that they felt some pressure I guess you'd say, to become initiated, and unless they were initiated, I mean, they should feel some pressure, but unless they were initiated, they didn't really have a place in any kind of, succession paradigm.
Well, yeah, I don't think initiation should be a requirement for, I mean, at least being part of advisory boards or councils or things like that. Initiation is a requirement for legal representation of ISKCON. That's always been Prabhupada's mood. But as far as being on management boards or advisory boards, I don't think that that's initiation is required. Nobody should be pressured to take initiation. I mean, Prabhupada took 11 years after meeting his guru before he took initiation. So when it's, initiation has to be something when someone's ready to make a promise and understanding the person who he's taking initiation from. The disciple tests the spiritual master, the spiritual master tests the disciple.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When you talk about succession and second generation, though, it seems like they usually talk about like born in the movement, born of devotees, but there's another second generation.
Yeah, that's, I was referring in general to all the second generation.
Okay.
All the second generation.
When we had a meeting for second generation here for succession, if you're over 50, too bad, you don't fit in the second, in the succession anymore, even if you're in the second generation. We weren't included.
Oh, so we should include second generation over 50.
We're looking for younger people. That's why we said we had a cutoff point of 50 years.
But we're not fully in succession yet. Even if we're 50, we could still do stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's room for people over 50. There's room for people over 70. Like me, This is my 70th year. Well, not 70th year in ISKCON. So 70th year. I can't even say 70th year in this body because the body's always changing. There's a 70th year, I don't know, since whenever.
This material identity.
Since, I can't say I was born because the soul's not born. How do you say it?
Appearance.
Appearance?
Yeah.
No, but I appear every day. I go to sleep and I go. Anyway, whatever. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.